This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Money shapes our freedom, our relationships, and the way we build a future. But if our lives don't follow the marriage, mortgage, kids script, a lot of financial advice can feel like it wasn't written with us in mind. Well, Jessica Brady is an award-winning money expert, former financial advisor and author of the new book, Get Growing. She spent nearly two decades in financial services, and now she's asking whether LGBTQIA+ Australians need a completely different way of thinking about money. Jessica, welcome to Drive.
Thank you so much for having me.
We talk a lot about equality and visibility, but we rarely talk about wealth in our community. Why do you think money is still such a quiet topic for LGBTQIA+ people?
It's a very good question, and one that I've asked myself for a long time, having worked a lot within the LGBTIQ+ community over many, many years, because I was seeing some really common threads when I was giving one-on-one financial advice, but I couldn't find the data that supported my gut feelings. So a couple of years ago, I actually did some research, and some of the insights were actually quite alarming. People in the community said that they were more likely to go into things like financial hardship with their bank if they were part of the LGBTIQ+ community. They were more likely to have to move back home with their parents or stay with friends or cut back on things like dining out or takeaway. So, you know, I think that there are some interesting common things that I'm seeing within the community, and now I have the data and the research that says that my instinct and my hunch was right.
Now, many of us are navigating things like, you know, discrimination at work, career breaks, fertility journeys, gender-affirming care, or supporting friends who become our chosen family. I mean, the list goes on. How do these realities change the way we need to think about financial planning?
Yeah, so, I mean, most people that I've worked with have a number of competing goals. And I think living in Australia today, maybe the world, but definitely Australia today, makes it really challenging. You know, once we could have all of the things that we thought we might want, and now what people are finding is with the cost of living increasing and housing increases, people are finding it quite challenging to navigate some really big money goals that are conflicting. So, you know, starting a family and potentially buying in a suburb or an area that feels safe and, you know, allows you to be part of the community. I think there would need to be extra care and consideration put on what are the goals that are important to you? Where is your money actually going? And are you spending it in ways that when you look back, you think, you know what, if I had my time again, maybe it was better for me to spend it on something that's perhaps longer away but more important to me. There's no one way to build wealth. And I think that that's a really important message. And there's no one way to live and to do something. And so I think it gives everyone an exciting opportunity to think about, well, what do I want to do with my money? What are the things that are important to me? Throw out the rule book, because what worked for future generations is not going to work today. And that can be slightly daunting and terrifying, but I also think really exciting. It's about getting back to basics. Where is your money going? Where do you want it to go? And how do you start taking those baby steps to move you forward?
We're chatting with author Jessica Brady about why LGBTQIA+ financial planning needs a bit of a rethink and how we can build wealth on our own terms. Now, Jessica, you describe money sometimes feeling less like freedom and more like stress. What patterns do you see in high-earning people, high-income people, who still feel stuck?
I think sometimes there can be this misconception that earning more money is going to fix everything. And if I just get to the next promotion, or if I get the next pay rise, if I get my bonus, if I get my tax return, all of my money worries will just simply vanish into thin air. And I think if you've ever had a promotion or a pay rise, you've probably worked out that that isn't exactly how it works. So earning more money absolutely can help, but getting an understanding of what are you doing with that money? How are you helping build your financial goals, and how are you harming and getting in your own way? And I like to talk in the book about this concept I've come up with as a money monster. So this little monster that lives inside of us that can behave quite irrationally at strange moments, and where we look back and think, goodness, why did I buy that thing? Or why am I going around in circles? And it doesn't matter how much income you earn, you cannot out-earn your money beliefs. And so starting with what do you think about money? Where does that come from? How is it showing up in your habits and your daily spending? And what could you be doing differently to get more in line with your bigger money goals is where, you know, I like to get people to start, because we love to think that money is so irrational and so rational and so logical, but money is really emotional and it can be really kind of confusing and contradictory.
Now, I mean, a lot of us carry, embarrassment about perhaps past spending or debt. Maybe there's been a few money monsters within. How do we shift from shame to strategy? Because a lot of people in the community are really good at managing shame.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what I have heard from many of the clients that I've worked with over the years who are part of the community is they feel, you know, for a long time they've had to hide themselves, and when they finally feel like they can be, you know, part and present of their community where they feel safe, they then sometimes get stuck into these spending habits because they want to be going to all the places and doing all the things and, you know, being a certain way or dressing a certain way or having all the nice things to feel really connected to that community. And it's incongruent with their goals. So it can be this, you know, piece where people feel, oh gosh, I've let go of all this shame and I've been able to, like, you know, show up as I am, but now I'm actually spending in a way to kind of keep up with that community at the detriment of my financial freedom. That can be a long, hard battle to overcome if you enable it, because you can spend money all day long if you want to. It's about where do you spend that is aligned to your values? How do you make sure that you are not overspending? And how do you have those crucial conversations with your friends to tell them, hey, I need to, you know, I think this is very needed where I am in at the moment after the weekend that we've just had. You know, I can't maybe commit to all of these events around, you know, certain times of the year like Mardi Gras, or here's the budget that I'm working towards for a dinner. Having money conversations and being that friend who is brave and saying, I'm trying to pay down my credit card or I can't afford that right now, might also help the people in your community be able to start those conversations as well. It normally takes one brave person to say, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm working towards, can we do things that fit within my budget, can you support me? And what you'll find is a lot of people then tell me that their friends say, oh, thank goodness, I've been thinking about this for a long time, but I felt so uncomfortable talking about it. So I think we just have to normalize money conversations and realize we've all made money mistakes. The one that you don't want to keep making is the one that makes you feel stressed, confused, overwhelmed, and silent. Shame thrives in silence, and we need to be able to start having inquisitive conversations about money at every turn so that we can break down those barriers and realize that everyone probably feels quite similar to you. It's just no one wants to talk about it.
Now, estate planning and insurance can be really important for queer people, particularly when our chosen family might not be legally recognised. What do we need to get right to make sure the people we love are protected?
You've got to do something. So rather than just hoping that nothing bad will happen or it will all work itself out, please don't leave your chosen family to sort through any financial mess should you become unwell or unable to advocate for yourself or no longer around anymore. I think there's a couple of really important things. Life insurance generally is considered a non-estate asset. And so if you have someone as a beneficiary that is not who you want that money to go to, you need to understand that that will bypass the will in most instances. So making sure that you've got a really clear understanding of who is currently your beneficiary, is that correct for things like life insurance? What is your will saying that you will do with all of your assets? Is it up to date? Is it valid? Is it correct? Have you had a conversation with the important people around where to find that information? Having conversations with family members can be quite important to avoid conflict, and knowing that there's a specific list of who can be what's considered a valid nomination on your super, because you might want it to go to a particular person in your life, but they may not be classed or listed as a valid beneficiary. So making sure you understand the rules and getting legal advice where appropriate is really, really important for people in the LGBTQ+ community.
Now, a lot in the community haven't necessarily grown up with financial literacy, maybe lack of role models, maybe a lack of a stable family, whatever the reason, now resulting in perhaps feeling a little bit behind. How do we stop that comparison cycle or spiral and start to sort of take control of our finances?
Yeah, comparisonitis, it is a highly infectious disease. And I think we can get so caught up with it, particularly with social media, and we can look at our boring, mundane life compared to those really filtered, exaggerated versions of those online and think, goodness me, I must be doing something wrong because my life is way less interesting than this. Get back to basics. What is important to you? What are you going to look back on your life and be really proud or excited that you did? And how are you spending or not spending in line with that? We can get so swept up. And there's so much marketing to tell us that we are but one purchase away from becoming the person that we want to be. And we get sucked into it and we try it over and over again, only to realize, this hasn't quite worked out. Maybe I'll buy the next thing I hope's best. And it's a game. It's a game. And we become into these consumerist monsters at the detriment of things that are important to us. And being able to be, you know, a financially stable or feel financially safe or be able to achieve really big goals. So, you know, comparison artists, it's easy for me to say stop comparing yourself to others. I mean, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But once you know, okay, cool, these are the things that are really important to me. I value freedom. I value adventure. I like going on holidays, or I like living in an area that makes me feel really safe and part of my community. These are really important to me. Then we can say, great, what can you give up financially so that you've got more financial resources to be able to do the things that you really like? And what goals are going to light you up? Because if you don't have really good financial goals, you're not going to fight for them. And in this cost of living crisis that we're all enduring, you're going to have to fight to, you know, be able to achieve your financial goals. And if you've got lukewarm money goals, you know, people say to me, oh, I'm not really enamored by money. I'm like, don't think of it like that. Think about what money can afford you. Get really clear on what it is that you want. And then when you get those little moments where someone invites you to do something, or that, you know, reel comes up or the ad comes up and you think, oh, maybe I just need this thing. Then you can go, no, I'm saving for this particular goal that I really care about. It is worth the trade-off. So it's about coming back to basics. And again, having those money conversations, unsubscribe from people who tempt you, get rid of people in your follow list, you know, start a different inbox for brands that you like when you want to buy things on sale, you know, take action that is going to stop you from sabotaging yourself and make you feel more confident and capable. And it's a step-by-step thing. You don't build Rome overnight. It's one step at a time and just keep moving yourself forward.
Jessica, really good to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was our award-winning money expert and author, Jessica Brady, whose new book, Get Growing, explores how we can build financial security in a way that reflects who we are and who we love.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.